From the recording library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
Welcome to this week's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American Sunday Lifestyle sections, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Sunday, April 5th, 2020. Laugh and Times, Section D. Arts Community Goes Virtual for Arts Advocacy Month by Sam Waller, SWALLER at OAOA.com. Local arts agencies are facing a particular challenge this year as Arts Advocacy Month gets underway in the midst of the coronavirus pandemic. Randy Hamm, Executive Director of Odessa Arts, said the organizations are committed to keeping the arts available to the public despite restrictions on public gatherings. Most of the organizations that need funds rely on performances and fundraisers and things like that to keep their doors open, Hamm said. Another thing that we noticed was that as people are sheltering in place, they're reading books, they're watching movies, they're listening to music. They're turning to the arts for comfort. We wanted to make sure that we helped remind people that we have arts agencies here who are missing them terribly. And when this is all over, to welcome everyone back to the museums, the theaters, and the concert halls. Hamm said the timing of the pandemic throws a kink into what has typically been the arts community's prime fundraising season. April has been Arts Advocacy Month for a while for us, he said. That's normally been when the arts agencies go to City Council and thank them for funding the arts through the occupancy tax and things like that. This year was actually going to be a little bit more special because we had Randy Cohen from Americans for the Arts coming down to present the findings of our economic impact study. Once all the COVID-19 stuff started happening, we knew Randy wasn't going to be able to come down to address the city council. We felt it was in everybody's best interest to follow the shelter-in-place guidelines. To keep people engaged, Hamm said, the arts community is taking a virtual approach. The Ellen Noel Art Museum is putting together some art lessons so you can not only look at art, but you can learn a new technique and create some art at home if you want to, he said. On top of that, many museums are offering virtual tours of the entire museum. You can go through the entire Philadelphia Museum of Art from the comfort of your home. Those are things that we're highlighting. Then, of course, we have artists in residence, which is encouraging local artists to record a performance at home, which they send in to us. It's aired on KPEJ on the morning show first, then we post it online as well. With art being so wide-reaching across a spectrum of media, Hamm said the virtual program will have something for everyone. Each week in the month will feature Monologue Mondays, theater, Impact of the Arts on Tuesdays, Wagner Noel Wednesdays, Museum Matters on Thursdays, Art Matters on Fridays, Public Art on Saturdays, and World Art on Sundays. We're trying to be a clearinghouse for everything, Hamm said. There are a lot of self-started art projects that have been going on for at least a week. We wanted to recognize those organizations and those individuals. We're trying to keep it general so people will know what to expect every day. The key, Hamm said, is to remind people that a vibrant arts scene is as vital to society as other facets of life. All of these organizations are struggling, just as everyone else is, with things like what are they going to look like when this comes back, Hamm said. Anyone that has an extra $5 to donate to the Permian Playhouse or the Ellen Noel or Odessa Arts, think of the arts organizations as much as you think of the West Texas Food Bank and the Red Cross and places like that. Figs perform well in West Texas. Figs are my older sister's favorite snack. When we were younger, we would sneak over to the neighbor's house to steal some off her tree. Granted, she was our great aunt, so we wouldn't get into too much trouble. But it was still a fun adventure to go and retrieve some of the sugary fruits. I grew up in El Paso, which has a similar climate to ours, and my great aunt really did low maintenance, and she still had a great yield year after year. They enjoy our heat and perform well out here. They enjoy soil types that range from coarse sands to heavy clay soil. But watch out for root knot nematodes in very sandy soil. They are quite easy to propagate. Hardwood cuttings that are taken when the plants are fully dormant will readily root. The cuttings should be 6 to 10 inches long and about 1/2 to 1 inch in diameter. To encourage callus formation, place the cuttings in a warm, humid environment, such as a moist paper towel placed in a plastic bag, for 10 to 14 days. Figs grow happiest in full sun. They are commonly planted on the south or east side of a home to help protect them from cold winter weather. They are best planted in late winter or early spring as dormant-rooted cuttings. Plant them 2 to 3 inches deeper than they were in the nursery. Be aware that they can grow up to 20 feet tall, so make sure you do not plant them closer than 16 feet apart. They have quite a shallow root system and benefit from mulching to help regulate water. For fertilization, small frequent applications of nitrogen will benefit young and mature fig trees. Gardening, Jeanette Castanon. Castanon is a horticulturist with Texas AgriLife Extension Service. She can be reached at 686-4700 or by email at Jeanette.Castanon, that's JEANETTE.CASTANON, at AG.TAMU.EDU. Master Gardeners, now is the most excellent time to plant a vegetable garden. By Jim Longstreet, Master Gardener. As COVID-19 has turned our world upside down, here are some important reasons why now is the most excellent time to plant a vegetable garden. We need an infusion of hope. No one who plants a garden does so without hope. Social distancing gives us a lot of time to use in some way. Planting and overseeing a garden is a very constructive and productive use of time. Our bodies need vitamin D to, among other reasons, fight viruses. Getting outside under the sun is a God-given and time-proven way to get it. The shelves are temporarily bare at most stores. A way to ensure our access to healthy food in the future is to grow our own right outside our back door. My mom grew a victory garden during World War II. We are presently at war with this virus, and a great way to proclaim early victory and live in hope is to plant seeds of hope that will strengthen us for eventual victory. I really need a Gethsemane, meaning a place to pray where I can sense God's presence. A beautiful place of color and diversity and life bursting forth is a vegetable garden. It is my Gethsemane, and I offer to you such a wonderful place, which is just in time for Easter. Resurrection and transformation are coming. We can pave the way by prayerfully planting seeds of hope. We need a different tact today. In this throwaway culture, as we so easily dispose of anything that we want to separate ourselves from, a good garden requires a very different tact, composting. Instead of trashing our unwanted grass cuttings, leaves, and unsalted table scraps, we can turn them into black gold to enrich our gardens. All it takes is time, heat, and water. Rainwater is best. And while we are gardening, we can take our anxiety and fears that we would like to dispose of, and instead we can turn them into a constructive motivation to grow vegetables, inner peace, and hope. It takes time, some heat, and the one who sends the rain. God can indeed prepare a table before us in the presence of our enemy. And while partnering with God, we can plant a garden in the face of COVID-19. That garden can cultivate hope in our neighborhoods and in our world. For more information, call the AgriLife office at 498-4071 in Odessa or at 686-4700 in Midland, or visit aggiehorticulture.tamu.edu or westtexasgardening.org. Gardening, Texas Master Gardeners. We are an educational service organization of volunteers trained by Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Service. Visit westtexasgardening.org. Pets of the Week. Chase, a 2-year-old male heeler mix, needs to be adopted into a good home. To adopt Chase or any of the other pets at the Humane Society of Odessa, stop by 7012 Mockingbird Lane, call 381-5503, visit www.odessahumanesociety.org, or leave a message at facebook.com/Humane Society of Odessa/. The Humane Society of Odessa is a no-kill pet adoption shelter, and all their pets require spay/neuter contract, along with an adoption application. Adoption fees for pets start at $50. Lex, a 1-year-old male cat, needs to be adopted into a good home. To adopt Lex or any of the other pets at the Humane Society of Odessa, stop by 7012 Mockingbird Lane, call 381-5503, visit www.odessahumanesociety.org, or leave a message at facebook.com/Humane Society of Odessa/. The Humane Society of Odessa is a no-kill pet adoption shelter, and all their pets require spay-neuter contract along with an adoption application. Adoption fees for pets start at $50. Photo courtesy of Odessa Humane Society.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Wednesday, April 8th, 2020. Golden Windmill Award winner stresses importance of languages by Ruth Campbell. An expert in bilingual education, University of Texas Permian Basin's Juliana Canfield is training tomorrow's teachers today. An assistant professor at the Language, Literacy, and Special Populations Department, Canfield recently won the 2020 Golden Windmill Award from the La Mancha Society of UTPB. She works with pre- and in-service teachers who are working to better serve their English language learner students. A former bilingual elementary and middle school language arts teacher in the Southwest, Canfield's work focuses on sociolinguistic self-explorations with bilingual teachers who have not yet earned their license, pre-service, around literacy experiences and actions to strengthen the professional commitment to serve English language learners. Canfield said she felt honored to win the Windmill Award because they want to support young scholars. I read about their requirements, and I felt like I could maybe compete. I felt honored. It's my second year at UTPB, and I have been very active scholarly since I joined UTPB. I have 5 publications, both in English and Spanish, in peer-reviewed journals. The most recent one is in Revista, the Harvard Review of Latin America, she said. This was related to her dissertation. Larry G. Daniel, Dean and Professor of the College of Education at UTPB, said Canfield represents a new generation of qualitative researchers who practice participatory action research. This research methodology allows the research participants to partner with the researchers to guide the inquiry and in some cases present and write about the research of which they are part. Juliana's methods are appropriately scientific while also being sensitive to the people being studied. The Golden Windmill Award will thrust her forward in what is already an excellent trajectory of producing meaningful research on the bilingual population, Daniel said in an email. Kenfield went through high school and college in her hometown of Cusco in southern Peru. She earned a Bachelor of Science degree in Business Administration with Tourism and Anthropology minors from the University of San Antonio Abad of Cusco in Peru. She earned her Master's degree in Applied Linguistics to Teaching from Antonio de Nebrija University in Madrid, Spain. Her doctorate is in Language, Literacy, and Sociocultural Studies from the University of New Mexico. Since joining UTPB in 2018, Kenfield's scholarly activity has earned local and national recognition. She also recently received the 2020 Distinguished Dissertation Award from the Critical Educators for Social Justice Special Interest Group within the American Educational Research Association. Her dissertation manuscript received third place for 2019 Outstanding Dissertation Awards by the National Association of Bilingual Education. A portion of Kenfield's research was published in the Revista Hard Review of Latin America. Revista is a prominent bilingual journal published by Harvard University. Kenfield said she teaches both undergraduate and graduate courses in bilingual and English as a second language. I teach courses related to equity in education, diversity, bilingualism, biliteracy, and cognition, and some teaching methods for English language learners. Basically, it's to better serve English language learners, she said. In Texas, one in every five students is an English language learner, according to our last statistics, our last census from the Texas Education Agency. So it's very important. It's most likely our future teachers, if they are bilingual or not. They are going to have a bilingual child. They are going to have four or five, maybe more than that, Kenfield said. There are early exit programs in bilingual education. What you try to do is support the child so they can exit the bilingual program by third grade or at the latest by fifth grade. But what happens when you have an immigrant child who just migrated and is a 12-year-old? This is a child who is going to enter sixth grade. There are different cases. It's just very complex, she said. Her passion for multilingualism emerged in her hometown of Cusco because there are nine languages spoken, but they are highly bilingual with Spanish and Quechua, an indigenous language. Kenfield said many of her relatives are bilingual, but she experiences language loss as many of her students at UTPB do. They have shared with her that their parents don't want them to be bilingual because of the stigma that they should speak English only. Kenfield was a bilingual classroom reader in Albuquerque, New Mexico for 7 years, earning her license with a bilingual endorsement in 2009. She said there were a large number of bilingual people there, not only with immigrants but Native Americans, and 19 languages spoken. When she was in college, Kenfield learned about an internship program for young professionals. She met the criteria, so she applied with the goal of improving her English. In 2005, she was sent to West Glacier National Park by Flathead Valley in Montana and met her husband, Doug, there. She and her husband, a botanist, have twins who have been bilingual from birth. Kenfield said she feels honored to train teachers. I believe that I can advocate for English language learners as a professor who is training future teachers, teachers who might consider the bilingual endorsement or not, but teachers who are going to have English language learners at the end of the day, she said.
Hello, this is Kay, reading the Odessa American for Tuesday, April 7th, 2020. Page 2, read. The 62nd Permian Basin Juried Art Exhibition by Michael Bauer, MBAUER at OAOA.com. COVID-19 might have delayed or canceled a number of events over the past month, but not being added to that list will be this year's Permian Basin Juried Art Exhibition. This year will mark the 62nd edition of the event, which aims to highlight the talent of artists in and around the West Texas region. The exhibition is scheduled to run from May 28th until August 9th. But with the threat of COVID-19, Illinois Art Museum curator Daniel Zeiss says the event will still go on but might just be online at a worst-case scenario. I think this is very odd for us this year, but we still plan on doing the show this year, Zeiss said. We're going to have digital submissions this year. If we don't end up doing the actual show, we'll do a show online. The juror will be able to select all the pieces that they would normally do, and then we will announce all the winners as part of that digital exhibition. According to Zeiss, people will be able to vote online during the two-month period of the exhibition. But if we actually get to open the museum, we will have people will have the option of bringing in their artwork if they want to, Zeiss said. But if we don't, we'll just do the online version. Submissions began on April 2nd and will continue until the April 23rd deadline. The awards will include Best of Show, in which the winner will also receive a solo show as part of next year's juried art exhibition, as well as a $450 prize. Second place will be a $450 prize, and third place will receive $250. There will also be honorable mentions, $150 each, as well as College Student Award and the People's Choice Awards. We have several more prizes, and this year, we've been trying hard to cultivate university students, not just from Odessa Midland, but West Texas in general, Zeiss said. We have prizes targeted towards them and honorable mentions as well. We've been trying to up our prizes a little bit, just to get more participation in. With the museum closed during coronavirus, submissions are being made in a digital format. The participants submit digital images of actual artworks to be considered for the juried exhibition. However, this isn't the first year that they've accepted digital submissions. We're just trying to streamline the process, and that's the way it was last year, Zeiss said. We're trying to make it easier for people to submit. Previously, people had to bring in their artwork. Someone came and judged it, and if you didn't get in, you would have to pick up your artwork the night of the opening, which was kind of rough. But that was when the museum was hosting, not running it. Now that the museum is running it, we switched over to a digital version so that everything is easier on the judge, and it's simply easier for the participants and not having to bring everything in. Last year when we tried it, it made it a lot easier on everybody. How the online exhibition happens is still being decided, according to Zeiss. If it happens that we're still closed in May, then we'll still do the digital edition. We're still researching how we're going to do that, like if we're going to do a Facebook album and then have all the entries in that format, but we're still researching that part. But anyone can still access it online. Regardless of whether we do the exhibition in-house or not, we'll still do the online version. That's a worst case. Hopefully, people feel comfortable to bring in their artwork. then we might do a smaller version of work that people brought in and that can be on view. Follow Michael Bauer on Twitter at OAMICHAELBA.
To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. Dear Dr. Roach, I'd like information about a rare condition called Mayer-Rokitansky-Kuster-Hauser syndrome. The person I am asking about with this condition was born in 1958 without a uterus or vagina and has one kidney. Were there any medicines or pills given at this time to pregnant women that could cause this condition? The mother says she does not remember taking anything. Would heavy alcohol consumption cause this? DD. Answer. Although I have never seen a case, Mayer-Rokitansky-Kuster-Hauser syndrome, also called Mullerian agenesis, is not as rare a condition as you might suppose, one in 5,000 births. It does have several variants. This condition is often not recognized. The person you are asking about has the less common atypical form of MRKH due to the missing kidney. Researchers originally thought that this condition was caused by maternal exposure to medication or infection. Thalidomide, 1954, and diethylstilbestrol, 1938, are drugs given around the same time that cause the potential for serious harm to the developing fetus. But the current thinking is that MRKH is a genetic condition. No link between an environmental cause and the condition has been found. MRKH is one of the more common causes of women not getting their first period. You can read more about it, including links to support groups, at tinyurl.com/MRKH syndrome.
Dear Abby, write Dear Abby at www.dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California 90069. Her column is distributed by Universal Press Syndicate. Girlfriend says man should find new home after prison. Dear Abby, my boyfriend of 15 years is in prison. We have two children together. Our relationship has been rough. We had a fight, and he went to jail for it. Another reason he went to prison is he'd violated his probation and failed to report. I take the kids to see him, and he still wants us to be together. He has nowhere to go when he gets out. How do I tell him I don't want him back at my house without him retaliating on me? Afraid in Texas. Dear Afraid, this is how. Tell him plainly that because of the circumstances that sent him to jail, you no longer want him living under your roof. It's bad for the children. Therefore, he will be finding other living arrangements when he is released. He may not like it, but please remember you owe him nothing. You have to stand your ground for your children's sake. Should he stalk or threaten you in any way, go to the police. Tell them you are afraid of him and why, and ask about a restraining order because he is violent. Dear Abby, when my husband and I eat a meal, as soon as he's finished, he gets up and wanders around. We call that the wandering phase of his meal. I have asked him to no avail to stay seated and talk with me. I think it is disrespectful. My husband also pulls out his phone when we are out with friends. I have told him that what he's doing is basically telling them he would rather see what's on his phone than converse with them. He doesn't do it for the entire meal, but when he does, it irritates me. How can I get basic manners across to him? Lonely at mealtime. Dear Lonely, I knew a person years ago who had an impulse control problem similar to the one you describe your husband's having. The man had been in an auto accident and suffered a traumatic brain injury. In your husband's case, it appears he either has attention deficit disorder or suffers from a lack of consideration for your feelings. There is help for the former, but you can't teach basic manners to someone who doesn't want to learn. You have my sympathy. Try not to let it give you heartburn. Dear Abby, I work as a parcel clerk in a major retail store. The biggest